Hello. Welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Friday, December 12th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes just two names: William Emanuel Bendix, 90, of Scottsdale, and Brett L. Richmond, 77, of Tempe. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the individuals listed in today's obituaries. Now we'll turn to the business section of the paper. Our first article: Company Recruiting Wienermobile Drivers. This was written by Amaris Encinas for the USA Today. Applications to drive Oscar Mayer's vehicle are now open. Recent college grads are invited to apply through January 31st to be part of the American Meat and Cold Cut Producers' next class of hot doggers, a one-year full-time adventure. That's according to Oscar Mayer in their December 8th press release. Established back in 1988, the Hot Dogger program was created to mentor young talent and prepare future leaders who, quote, embody innovation, creativity, and community spirit, unquote. They added, quote, the relished position offers fans the opportunity to become official spokespeople of the brand while living out its mission of sparking smiles across the country, unquote. Well, each person is expected to drive and maintain the 27-foot-long hot dog on wheels over the course of a year-long cross-country road trip. Hot doggers double as brand ambassadors, attending hundreds of events annually and developing custom content, all while visiting upwards of 30 states. According to a job posting from the Kraft Heinz Company, hot doggers earn a base salary of $35,600, with a weekly allowance of $150 for meals and personal travel. Additional resources include a full health benefits package, 18 days of paid time off, and 100% of hotel expenses covered. Only 12 superfans will be selected to join Oscar Mayer's 39th class of hot doggers and usher in the Wienermobile's 90th anniversary. Interested parties can apply for the position on the Kraft Heinz career page and follow the journey on social media, mainly found on Instagram and TikTok. And that was the article, Company Recruiting Wienermobile Drivers. Our big article from the business section is entitled Chinese Firms Expand Investment in Vietnam. This is written by Francisco Guerasquillo from the Reuters News Group out of Hanoi, Vietnam. Chinese firms are expanding in Vietnam, leading investment inflows and sending record shipments to Hanoi in defiance of U.S. calls for decoupling as the communist neighbors beef up their ties. Recent steps that Hanoi had long resisted on security grounds include sensitive tech contracts for Chinese telecommunication firms Huawei and ZTE, along with approval of Chinese loans for high-speed rail links and Chinese-made COMAC planes cleared by regulators for a leading airline. Hanoi's overtures to Beijing may reflect its long-standing policy of balancing foreign ties after pledges made to Washington in trade talks, according to Alexander Vu Ving of the Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies. But if the trend continues, he added, quote, Vietnam may become a torn country rather than a swing state, unquote. While the Southeast Asian nation opened its economy to U.S. multinationals and technology, after Washington lifted its embargo back in the 1990s, it stayed cautious over China after their 1979 war and their disputes over the South China Sea boundaries. But now Beijing's influence is rising, and the U.S. ties are strained by tariffs. Chinese firms have made pledges to transfer technology. Those were rare until now, and they increasingly view Vietnam as a consumer market rather than just an assembly base, according to a Reuters review of data and industry interviews. The shift has been turbocharged by tariffs of 20% imposed by Washington, said Phan Xuyen Dung, a researcher at the ISEAS Yusof Ishak Institute in Singapore. He said Vietnamese officials were displeased by what they saw as punitive U.S. measures, and this pushed them to hedge by leaning economically further into China, unquote. Vietnam's foreign ministry and the White House did not respond to requests for comment. China's foreign ministry said that economic cooperation benefits both countries. Now, despite U.S. pressure to curb reliance on Chinese technology and components, imports from China stood at about $168 billion through November. That's up nearly 30% on the year, already well above all of 2024, which was itself a record year. Nearly one-third of those imports are electronic parts, often re-exported in goods bound for the United States. Consumer imports, including vegetables and cars, are also climbing. Facing fading anti-China sentiment among younger Vietnamese is helping drive the surge, dovetailing with Beijing's push to find new markets amid the U.S. tariffs and emboldening Chinese companies to take on domestic champions. E-scooter maker Yadea, that's Y-A-D-E-A, sold more than 36,000 units in Vietnam in the year's first 10 months, ranking fourth nationwide, according to the non-public registration data that was obtained by Reuters. Though far beyond domestic EV leader VinFast, Yadea is its main rival in the fast-growing electric market, while internal combustion engine leaders Honda and Yamaha lose ground as Vietnam phases out gasoline engines. The EV giant BYD, which is expanding dealerships and charging stations nationwide, also keeps their sales figures confidential. Chinese retailers and tech giants are also advancing. The real estate agency CBRE said this in August, quote, "One notable highlight of the Ho Chi Minh City retail market since late 2024 has been the entry and expansion of Chinese brands," unquote. TikTok, owned by ByteDance, is Vietnam's top social platform for shopping, according to an October survey by Rocket Market research firm Q&Me showed. Lazada, which is part of Alibaba, ranks among the leading e-commerce sites, while Tencent is an indirect investor in Shopee and Tiki, which are Vietnam's other two top online retailers. Chinese investment in Vietnam has been growing for years as suppliers relocated to avoid U.S. tariffs. Now, joint ventures with Vietnamese partners are becoming more common, at times involving transfers of technology, according to Steve Bui, that's B-U-I, who is chairman of the Vietnam-China Business Council. Apart from confidential deals, 12 Chinese members of the council have transferred or plan to transfer technology to Vietnamese partners this year versus none in 2024. He said that is a sign of long-term commitments. Among them is CNTE, backed by battery maker CATL, which produces battery energy storage systems. CNTE has partnered with Delta ENC, which is a firm headed by Bui, to build a factory in northern Vietnam, aiming to export 250 containers a year from October 2026. And CNTE said it was providing technical support. So from January through November, Chinese and Hong Kong firms have pledged more than $6.7 billion, thus making them Vietnam's largest investors, according to official data. At the Deep Sea Industrial Park, which is one of northern Vietnam's largest clusters, Chinese manufacturers make up a quarter of the tenants. Well, that's up from 10% back in 2019, according to sales director Cohen Sonnens. What began as tariff hedging is now as much about insurance as growth, said Dan Martin of consultancy Dazan Shira. He added, the scale and diversity of Chinese projects is reshaping Vietnam's industrial landscape. And that was the article, Chinese Firms Expand Investment in Vietnam. Our final article from the business section of the paper is entitled, Google Could Be Hit with Large Fine. This was written by Fu Yan Chi for the Reuters News Group out of Brussels. Alphabet's Google is set to be hit with a potentially large European Union fine early next year if it does not do more to ensure that its App Store complies with EU rules aimed at ensuring fair access and competition, according to people with direct knowledge of the matter. A fine could ratchet up tensions with the United States, which says a series of recently adopted EU laws target U.S. tech companies, which is criticism rejected by Europe, but which has made it into Washington's newly published national strategy document. Google Play has been in the European Commission's crosshairs since last March, with regulators singling out technical restrictions, preventing app developers from steering users to other channels for cheaper offers. Another issue is the service fee that is charged by Google for facilitating an app developer's initial acquisition of a new customer via Google Play, which the regulator said goes beyond what is justified. Tweaks to Google Play, announced in August to make it easier for app developers to direct customers to other channels and to choose a fee model, are still falling short, with the EU antitrust regulator viewing Apple's recent changes to its App Store as a benchmark. Now, Apple overhauled its App Store in June after being fined $583.5 million over technical and commercial curbs that prevented app developers from informing customers of cheaper deals outside the platform. EU regulators are expected to say that Apple's changes in rules and fees comply with the Digital Markets Act, a landmark set of rules that set a list of do's and don'ts for big tech to ensure that rivals are able to compete and that consumers have more choices. Now, Google can still offer to make more changes before the regulators impose their fine, likely in the first quarter of 2026. People who knew about this are adding that the timing of any sanction can still change. And a Google spokesperson said, quote, we continue to work closely with the European Commission in its ongoing investigation, but have serious concerns that further changes would put Android and Play users at risk of malware, scams, and data theft. Unlike iOS, Android is already open by design, unquote. And the European Commission declined to comment. That's the article, Google Could Be Hit with Large Fine. Well, we're coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, so we're time for us to move on over to the sports section to find out what's happening there. On the front page of the sports section, there's a picture, an interesting angle. The photographer must have been sitting underneath the basket. Lugens Dort, number 5 of the Thunder, goes up for a block on Mark Williams, number 15, of the Suns, during the second half of the NBA Cup quarterfinals game on December 10th at Paycom Center in Oklahoma City. It looks like Mark Williams has got the ball, and he is about horizontal up off the floor, and there's two Oklahoma City defenders up above him, and he's trying to shoot the basket over them as he goes down. The title in that picture is A New Low. This was written by Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic, and it comes from Oklahoma City. This went from bad to worse to historically awful. The Phoenix Suns trailed by as many as 53 points in suffering their worst loss ever. They fell 138-89 to the defending NBA champion Oklahoma City in an NBA Cup quarterfinal game on December 10th. It was before a sellout crowd of 18,203 at Paycom Center. Suns coach Jordan Ott said, quote, "The gap isn't that much in between the two of us, but tonight it was," unquote. Now, the previous record was 48 points, set back in the 2017-18 season opener. That's when Phoenix lost to the Portland Trail Blazers by a score of 124-76 at home. Later that season, the San Antonio Spurs throttled the Suns by the same margin, 129-81 in Phoenix. Phoenix finished that season a woeful 21-16. These 2025-2026 Suns, whose current record is 14-11, are better than that 2017 squad, but they were no match for the NBA's top team on Wednesday night. Suns forward Dylan Brooks said, quote, "Got to play harder. That isn't a representation of us as an organization, as a team, coaching staff, players. That ain't us," unquote. The Suns had just pushed the almighty Thunder, whose record is 24-1, to the brink just a month ago in NBA Cup group play before losing 123-119 back on November 28th. It was Oklahoma City's closest margin of victory in what has ballooned into a franchise record 16-game winning streak. This rematch was a Thunder obliteration. Oklahoma City closed the first half with a 20-6 surge, hitting 6 three-pointers during that stretch to take a 74-48 halftime lead. The Thunder cooked the Suns with 22 of 40 shooting from three-point land and 34 points off of 21 Phoenix turnovers. The reigning NBA MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, scored a game-high 28 points in 27 minutes to lead Oklahoma City to the NBA Cup semifinals on December 13th in Las Vegas. The number one-seeded Thunder will face the number three-seeded San Antonio Spurs at T-Mobile Arena in the second semifinal. That'll be after the third-seeded New York Knicks and the number one seed Orlando Magic battle in a first semifinal in Vegas. Now Brooks paced the Suns with 16 points on 4 of 6 shooting. Phoenix lost the possession game as Oklahoma City attempted 4 more shots from the field, trailed the last 47 minutes and 53 seconds of play, and only scored 6 points off of 7 offensive rebounds. The Suns were down Devin Booker with a right groin strain, Jalen Green with a right hamstring strain, and two-way player Isaiah Livers with a right hip strain. The Suns also lost Grayson Allen to a flagrant 2 ejection in the second half on Wednesday. So here are 3 quick takeaways as the Suns will resume play on December 14th against the Los Angeles Lakers at Mortgage Matchup Center in Phoenix. The second-seeded Lakers, with a record of 17-7, They lost to the Spurs in the NBA Cup quarterfinals on December 10th in Los Angeles by a score of 132-119. Booker has shown throughout his NBA career that he will return from injury too soon and re-injure himself. Case in point, Booker missed 3 games with groin soreness in the 22-23 season. He returned to action on Christmas, and he suffered a left groin strain in the first quarter against the Denver Nuggets, and he then missed 21 consecutive games. For Phoenix to sit him out for a 3rd straight game after he experienced a right groin strain on December 1st against the Lakers was a smart move. Phoenix fell behind by as many as 20 points early in the second quarter, but closed that gap to 11 points with 8 minutes and 21 seconds left. The Suns stayed within striking distance, trailing 54-42, before Oklahoma City closed the final 3 minutes and 53 seconds of the first half on a 20-6 run that was fueled by 6 made 3-pointers. So they took the halftime lead at 74-48. Lou Dort nailed half of those threes, while Aaron Wiggins, Jalen Williams, and Gilgeous Alexander each hit 1 from distance. Williams closed the run with his 3-pointer with 1.2 seconds left. The Thunder don't need extra motivation to play well, but they made a statement in blasting Phoenix after that close win a month ago. They brought a level of intensity, focus, and aggressiveness that overwhelmed Phoenix. The Suns are not as bad as the final score, but Oklahoma City reminded them they have a long way to go to reach their level. Colin Gillespie has posted 12 consecutive double-digit scoring games. He averaged 17.6 points during that stretch, shooting 46.7% from three-point land. The usually even-keel guard scored a then-career-high 24 points in that 4-point loss at Oklahoma City, before topping that with 28 on December 1st against the Lakers. Gillespie had the Thunder's full attention on Wednesday. They brought physicality to Gillespie. They crowded him. He went scoreless in the first half and finished the night with just 2 points on 1-of-5 shooting, and he committed 4 turnovers. Gillespie was having more frustrating conversations with the referees than normal. Well, it's official. As Ott put it, Gillespie has moved up in the scouting report. Now, Gillespie not only has a chance to respond, but also to adjust to how teams are defending him now. And that was Dwayne Rankin's article, A New Look. Then, our second article from the front page of the sports section, Defensive Standouts Help Set Standard with ASU. This is by Michelle Gardner for the Arizona Republic. The so-called Foundational Five took a leap of faith when they signed with the Arizona State Sun Devils out of high school in 2023. That year, the Sun Devils were coming off a 3-9 season. The program was a mess amid the NCAA sanctions, courtesy of the previous coaching regime. There had been a coaching change, and those five still arrived in Tempe. The program made an unprecedented resurgence from 3 wins in 2023 to 11 wins and a Big 12 championship in 2024. And now, 2 of those key members of that 5-man team are facing life-changing decisions. Return to Arizona State for their senior season, or declare for the NFL draft. The program is better for having them as part of the foundation, and the players are better because they are now on the brink of starting professional careers. That group is led by cornerback Keith Abney II and defensive tackle C.J. Fight, both of whom are projected to be selected in the next NFL draft. Abney's stock is on the rise after a phenomenal season, He was named a first-team All-American by one organization this week. The other three members of the Foundational Five are injured running back Kyson Brown, safety Montana Warren, and offensive lineman Sean Nah. The Sun Devils, whose record is 8-4, have begun preparations for their December 31st date against ACC champion Duke, whose record is 8-5, and that will be in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. The work this week has been primarily with ASU's younger players, who need practice repetitions. Many starters are not practicing this week because of the load they carried during the 12-game season. Abney and Fight said they are giving their bodies a break and still have not decided whether they will participate in the bowl game. They're also still weighing the decision of college football versus the NFL. While many starters were not at practice, Abney and Fight were on hand, doing some light conditioning work and helping out their understudies. Abney was asked what will factor into his decision, and he said, quote, "I feel like all the analytics and statistics are there. It's just me praying, talking to my family, talking to my mentors, getting as much advice as I can. Overall, I feel like I played great football this year. I put in the work to put myself in the position I am now, so I feel good about my performance," unquote. Now, Fight's numbers don't jump off a page, but he was the most notable returner on the defensive line. He often faced double teams with opponents game planning for him, and he considers that a compliment. He said there will be many factors in his decision. He said, quote, "Stock, how the body is feeling, the dynamic of the team, things like that. It all plays a part. I talk to the coaches a lot. I know what it looks like coming back, so I'm trying to figure out what it looks like if I were to go. It's a matter of figuring out what's the best fit for me, the best fit for my future going forward," unquote. Four of the Foundation Five, including Ann Abney and Fight, hail from Texas. The state is big enough that they never played against each other in high school. Abney and Brown, however, are best friends and have been since their days of playing youth football together, and they are roommates as well. Still, Fight and Abney have much in common. They are both part of the Pat Tillman Leadership Council, voted on by their peers. Both are serious students, with Abney enrolled in the Barrett Honors College. Fight is wrapping up his degree in entrepreneurship, which he earned in 3 years by taking college courses in high school. Both of his parents are in the education profession. All five of these Foundational Five were three-star prospects in high school. They had offers, but they were players who needed nurturing before making an impact in a power conference. Fight got more playing time than the other four out of necessity because of injuries on the defensive line. He and Abney became starters as sophomores on the 2024 Big 12 championship team and have been mainstays in the lineup ever since. Fight has 31 career starts. Both have started the last 26 games. The two of them say they appreciate being part of the building process. Abney said, quote, "It changed me a lot being out there, no family with me. I have my brothers on the team, of course. I love them to death. I made tight bonds with those guys. It has grown me a lot, learning a lot, coming here as a freshman and learning from other guys, and now here I am today," unquote. Fight had originally committed to ASU back in July of 2022, but he decommitted in late November after the coaching change, and then he recommitted after talking with the new coaches. He said, quote, "Once you get a good group of guys and a good group of coaches, I feel like there's a lot you can do, a lot you can get done. We got a lot done in those 3 years, and this program can go places. This is just the beginning, so I'm excited to see where this program goes over the next few years. I just knew it was God's plan for me to be here and living out these 3 years. I can tell God's working in my life. I was placed here for a reason. It's a great place. If anybody asks me, I can tell them my experience may be different than yours, but my experience has been great. It's been a blessing to be here, unquote. Well, if the two exit for the draft, it's safe to say they are leaving the program in a better place than when they arrived. Abney said, quote, when you take your official visit coming out of high school or in the transfer portal, this is the vision you want toward the end of it, like seeing the program turn around and turning into a winning program and having a good culture around it and good guys around and good people around. This is definitely the vision you want for sure, unquote. And that was the article by Michelle Gardner, Defensive Standouts Help Sit Standard with ASU. Well, we've had one article that was a little football, and one article a little basketball, and now we got a little article about a little baseball. Hazen Talks Strategy as Mart Draws Interest, written by Nick Pecoro for the Arizona Republic out of Orlando. The Arizona Diamondbacks departed the winter meetings with one more starting pitcher than they had when they arrived, and with a better sense for the market for their superstar second baseman, Ketel Marte. General manager Mike Hazen still pegged the odds as being against a Marte deal taking place, but he said he came away with a better sense of how many teams will be serious suitors. Hazen said, quote, I think we moved the ball down the field a little bit in terms of some discussions on things in both free agency and trade, unquote. Now, Hazen acknowledged the risk involved with a Marte trade. It is not his first choice, but he said it might be his only one that allows him to cross off all the items on his team's off-season to-do list. He would love to plug his holes with some combination of smaller deals or free agent signings. Hazen said, quote, it's just a question for us of how realistic is putting all these moves together in aggregate that may equal one of something else. Or maybe you don't get all of it, but you put a big dent in it. That's the challenge, unquote. Marte has been linked to a number of teams, including the Boston Red Sox, the Tampa Bay Rays, and the Cincinnati Reds. The Diamondbacks' conversations have revolved largely around starting pitching. According to league sources, the Diamondbacks and the Rays discussed a deal that would involve both right-handers Shane Baz and Ryan Replott, though no agreement is set to be close. Conversations with another club, according to a source, involved a more high-profile starting pitcher as the starting point of a deal, with other pieces expected to be added. The Diamondbacks expect talks to continue to heat up as more free agent bats come off the board. Thus far, only sluggers Kyle Schwarber and Pete Alonso have agreed to deals, thus leaving the likes of Kyle Tucker and Bo Bichette and Cody Bellinger and Alex Bregman still unsigned. What the Diamondbacks are considering doing, trading an established star hitter for a deal that largely involves pitching, is viewed in the industry as a risky maneuver. Pitching is more fickle, largely in terms of health, but also performance. A rival executive said, quote, every day, impact position players are the hardest things to acquire. I'm not saying trading Marte for pitching is the wrong thing to do, but I do think it's risky, unquote. Well, Hazen said, quote, I think it's a risky deal when you're talking about trading really, really good players at all. It's something that we have to at least listen to in our job. It's not something that you really look forward to necessarily when you have the players that we do, but it's also the reality of our team and where we are that I have to consider some things, unquote. The Diamondbacks' only substantive move this week was agreeing to terms with right-hander Michael Soroka, who will plug into their starting rotation once his deal becomes official. The Diamondbacks are hoping to add enough talent this winter that they can overcome a glut of injuries to their roster, which is especially hurting their pitching staff. including pitchers Corbin Burns and Justin Martinez and A.J. Puk and outfielder Lourdes Gurriel, the Diamondbacks will open the season with more than $50 million worth of players on the injured list. And as of this week, that amounts to nearly a third of their estimated payroll entering 2026. Hazen noted his team's tough early season schedule and the need to get through the first 2 months of the season, at which point the Diamondbacks can expect to start getting their injured players back on the roster. If they remain in the hunt at the deadline, they can always bolster their team then. Hazen said, quote, "I expect to have a competitive ball club next year. I don't know exactly what that's going to mean, but we have too many good players not to have a competitive baseball team. I have a lot of work to do to make that a reality. I'm not just laying that on the feet of the coaching staff and the manager. We have a lot of work to do to back that up. And we've been in this position before. I'm confident we're working to try to solve all these problems as best we can. I think we're going to solve some of them." And that was Hazen talks strategy as Mart draws interest. And the final article from the front page of the sports section is about high school football in Arizona. Richard Obert for the Arizona Republic wrote this, "Pete, ready to build South Point football." Cassius Pete said he signed his offer sheet on Wednesday, December 10th, to become the new head football coach at South Point High School in South Phoenix. He will be undergoing a major rebuilding job after the Canyon Athletic Association program, which did not play in 2025, went 1-2 last year and 0-4 in 2023, unable to finish the season due to a lack of players. The Griffins did not play in 2022 and 2021, and they went 0-4 in 2020. In 2019, they went 1-7 following their 10-0 2018 season. Now, Pete, who is 28, was a top two-sport athlete at Tempe Corona del Sol, where he played football and basketball. He teamed up with then-freshman Marvin Bagley III and Alex Barcelo to capture the 2015 State Basketball Championship, which was that school's fourth consecutive. Pete's youngest sibling, Koa Pete, matched his feat of winning four state championship rings in basketball in his high school career. He did at Gilbert Perry, winning his fourth last season when he was the state's Player of the Year for a third consecutive season. South Point will be moving into 11-man football next season in the CAA. Pete said he clicked with school leader Larry McGill Jr. and athletic director Brandon Wright. He knows about rebuilding jobs. He led Heritage Gateway's football program in Queen Creek in 2022 after that school had no football for 5 years. He said, quote, "I'm older now than when I went to coach the Heritage team. With those two NFL years working for the Raiders and the Cardinals, I learned so much from marketing and enterprising to get players. It looks like this program is from the ground up. So how do I market to get there? We want to make this program somewhere people want to come. What people don't know is that it's an A-plus school and has open borders. I feel so blessed being 28, still being around the game full-time and impacting these kids' lives in some way. I don't know what's going on at home, but what I do know is that when they're around Coach Pete, they're going to have confidence. They're going to feel good about themselves. They're going to learn the game of football the right way up," unquote. Now, Pete grew up in a big athletics household. He was one of seven children. His dad, Todd Pete, played offensive line for the Cardinals and the Los Angeles Raiders. Todd's oldest son, Todd Jr., played on the defensive line at Corona del Sol and signed out of high school with Nebraska. Andrus Pete was the 13th overall NFL draft pick by the New Orleans Saints in 2015 after a standout college career at Stanford. Cassius Pete signed with Michigan State out of high school as a linebacker. Keona Pete is an offensive lineman at Arizona State. And sisters Leilani and Maya play college basketball. And Koa Pete, the youngest, is making an immediate impact on the number one ranked Arizona's basketball team this season. Koa used to attend all of Cassius's high school basketball games. Cassius had a big mentoring part in Koa's life. Cassius grew up wanting to play with his big brother's friends. He said, "I used to beg the adults to let me practice with them." He said he wants to play every player. He said he'll have open practices a couple of times a week so parents can see what they're doing. Cassius said, quote, "We're going to have great team chemistry. We're going to bond. The start of the 2026 year, I treat it as winter conditioning, like at Michigan State. We're going to get going right away." Pete said the school's campus is set up to develop young players. Besides the open school boundaries, it has an elementary school and a middle school that feed into South Point. He said, quote, "I'm going to be at the elementary school, the middle school. I'm going to be personable. I'm going to say, 'Hey, who's your favorite NFL team?' Because it's about people and relationships and hard work. It's going to be fundamentals. It's not rocket science. I'm going to break it down nice and easy for them." And that was the article, Pete Ready to Build South Point Football. Well, we're coming up on 42 minutes past the hour, so we need to get moving out of this section of the paper. I think we have time for a couple of sports briefs, so let's try some of those. First off, NASCAR reaches settlement to end antitrust trial. NASCAR reached a settlement agreement on Thursday morning with Front Row Motorsports and Michael Jordan's 23XI Racing in a federal courtroom in Charlotte. The two race teams filed an antitrust lawsuit against the motorsports organization in 2024. They alleged monopolistic practices and accused NASCAR of using anti-competitive tactics to pressure teams into compliance. The terms of the settlement, which came one day after the plaintiffs rested their case following 8 days of testimony, have not been disclosed, but an attorney for the teams said that he was pleased. Plaintiff's attorney Jeffrey Kessler said, quote, "I'm pleased to say that the parties have positively settled this matter in a way that will benefit the industry going forward," unquote. Well, the settlement process began first thing Thursday in the courtroom of U.S. District Judge Kenneth D. Bell, who called for a surprise one-hour recess. After about 90 minutes of deliberations, Kessler returned to the courtroom to announce a settlement. Then we have ex-LSU star invites Michigan quarterback Underwood to transfer. Within hours of Michigan firing Sherrone Moore on Wednesday, rumors and recruitment encircled quarterback Bryce Underwood. The number one player in the class of 2025, Underwood infamously flipped his commitment from LSU to Michigan to join the Wolverines and play for Moore last year. Underwood is expected to wrap his freshman season in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl in a high-profile matchup with Arch Manning and Texas on New Year's Day. But players are permitted a 15-day winter window to enter the transfer portal following a coaching change, and other programs are not likely to tiptoe around the topic of adding a five-star quarterback. To be sure, big-name alumni are not waiting for any imaginary grace period. Quote, "Come home, son," at Bryce Underwood 16, unquote, former LSU and NFL safety Tyrann Mathieu said via X on Wednesday night. Quote, "We are waiting and will accept you with open arms, forever, LSU," unquote. That's new LSU coach Lane Kiffin built a playoff team at Ole Miss utilizing the transfer portal and can point to the 2025 first-round pick Jackson Dart with the New York Giants as one of such success story, because before Dart starred at Ole Miss, he was at USC. So those are the two sports briefs. Ex-LSU star invites Michigan quarterback Underwood to transfer, and NASCAR reaches settlement to end antitrust trial. And that brings us up to 45 minutes past the hour. Time to move on over to the entertainment section. We're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. So we will begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Is it worth the fight? The moon's clash with Mars makes you extra sensitive to disagreements on the job. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, why won't they follow your lead? You want to call the shots. For Geminis, May 21st to June 21st, are you getting into it with a loved one? Find the middle ground. For Cancer, birthdays from June 22nd through July 22nd, are you flying solo? You need space to work at your own pace. For Leos, July 23rd through August 22nd birthdates, you want what you want. But what if you don't get it? Virgos, August 23rd through September 22nd. Are you doing things your way? Remember that your actions affect those around you. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birthdates, slow down. You are impatient. If you don't pace yourself, this won't end well for you. For Scorpios, birth dates from October 24th to November 21st, are you demanding respect? Your goal is to earn another's admiration, but your strategy may backfire. For Sagittarius, birth dates from November 22nd through December 21st, are you making waves at work? Do so without courting controversy or pushing buttons. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th. Are you waking up on the wrong side of the bed? You are in an edgy mood. Aquarius, birthdays from January 20th to February 18th. Specify what you expect from your friends. You might have to repeat yourself. And finally, Pisces, birthdates from February 19th to March 20th. Shooting first and asking questions later. Beware of clashing with your boss. And those were today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren in her column, Dear Abby. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, as my parents have aged, my father has been misremembering things or making wrong assumptions. It has increasingly gotten on my mom's nerves. She has also become more impatient and snappy lately, and she has been yelling at him in response. Sometimes he responds back, but usually he doesn't. My sister snapped at them, saying she is tired of their bickering, so they don't do that around her as often anymore. But any time I have gotten upset about it or tried to suggest to them how to resolve things, Mom gets upset with me. My mental health isn't the best right now, so continuing to do that doesn't seem like a good idea. But I'm at a loss about what to do. Any thoughts? Signed, Uncertain in Iowa. And Abby responds by writing this. Dear Uncertain, before this situation grows worse, please understand that it may be necessary for both of your parents to have physical and neurological examinations. If you can arrange for that, please do. The changes you describe in your father may be signs of dementia, and your mother may be stressed to the point that she can no longer deal with him without losing it. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, my 13-year-old son was getting off the school bus. His friend was in front of him. My son thought it would be funny to take his friend's water bottle out of his backpack and drop it on the pavement. A few days later, my son got sent to the principal's office, not because he was in trouble, but because the parents had called the school to complain about their son's scuffed water bottle and wanted it replaced. They asked for $23. I wrote a check, and I was tempted to add a snarky comment, but I didn't. Yes, my son should have kept his hands to himself, but the water bottle is still functional. My son apologized. Am I living my life wrong? Or is it okay that they just invoiced me like that? Signed, Unsure in Illinois. And Abby responds, Dear Unsure, your son may have been trying to be funny when he damaged another student's property, but the boy's parents didn't see the humor in it. The bottle wasn't the disposable kind, and the parents were not out of line to expect to be reimbursed for your son damaging it. Perhaps he can reimburse you. We have another letter. Dear Abby, our family is already picking out items they want after my wife and I pass. They bring the subject up at every gathering. They have even started marking the items they want. My wife and I are 67 and 68. We are healthy and don't plan on dying for a while. This is starting to upset us both. How to shut them up is my question, signed Annoyed in Texas. And Abby responds, Dear Annoyed, your family gatherings remind me of a pack of slavering wolves surrounding their potential prey. Here's how to shut them up. At the next gathering, tell your kin that if they keep this up, when you and your wife depart this earthly plane, all of your possessions will be going to charity. And remember, you can contact Abigail by two ways. You can go to her website, www.dearabby.com, or you can write her a letter. Mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90069. And now let's look at the comics. Our first comic strip is Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall. And there's Dagwood at the office, and he walks into Mr. Dithers' office. Mr. Dithers is sitting in his chair, and Dagwood's got his hands on his hip, and he says, You know, some bosses appreciate that their employees are the backbone of the company. And Mr. Dithers says, Backbone? Ha! And in the next frame, he turns around and looks at Dagwood, and he says, You're more like a spare rib dipped in gravy, Bumstead. And in the third frame, Dagwood walks out of his office and says, Boy, he sure knows how to shut down an argument. And that was Blondie. And then there's Zitz, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman. And, oh boy, in the first frame, Dad is laying in his recliner. I mean, it's pitched all the way back. He's laying almost out flat. His feet are up on the pedestal. And he's got a book on, laying open on his chest, face down. He's not reading it. And it looks like there's a drink, a can of something on the side of this recliner. Jeremy comes in the room and Dad says, Your mom thinks I'm less interesting than I used to be. And Jeremy says, That's just wrong. And in the last frame, he starts to walk away from his dad. And he says, Also, literally impossible. And his dad is saying, She used to love my mayonnaise sandwiches. And that was Zitz. In the comic strip Beetle Bailey, there's just two frames. In the first frame, it looks like Beetle has got a box on top of his bed in the barracks. And he's doing something with it. And a private comes up and says, What's that? And Beetle says, I didn't have enough money to buy Buxley a nice present, so I'm re-gifting. And in the second frame, the other private says, Do you really think she's going to like a socket wrench set? Oops! That was Beetle Bailey. And in Hagar the Horrible, drawn by Chris Brown, only two frames also. First frame, Hagar says, These clean clothes feel tighter. Too many hot water washings can cause that. And then we see that he's sitting at a table and it's piled high with food, and his wife Helga says, So can too many huge hot dinners. And that was Hagar the Horrible. And in Peanuts, drawn by Charles Schulz, there's Snoopy on top of his doghouse with his typewriter. And Lucy's standing down in front of the doghouse, and she says, Now look, you stupid beagle. Beethoven's birthday is this Saturday. I want my book in all the stores by then, so get typing. And in the last frame, Snoopy thinks, If we change the name to Bach, it would go faster. And that was Peanuts. And in Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott, first frame, oh, there's Mom and her two daughters, Zoe and Wren, and they're sitting on the floor. Looks like they're in a, got their legs crossed, looks like they're sitting in a yoga position, and Hammy walks in. And Hammy says, "What are you guys doing?" And Mom says, "Shh, we're meditating." And Hammy in the next frame says, "Can I try?" And Mom opens an eye and kind of looks at him and says, "Well, of course." And in the third frame, Hammy turns to run out of the room going, "I have to get something first." And Mom is trying to reach out and grab him by the collar and says, "This is a kazoo-free meditation." And that was Baby Blues. Well, we don't have much time left, so let's wish happy birthday to some celebrities who are celebrating today. We have the singer and TV host Dionne Warwick turns 85. The actor Bill Nighy turns 76. The gymnast and actress Kathy Rigby turns 73. Actress Cherie Wilson turns 67. Actress Jennifer Connelly turns 55. Actress Regina Hall turns 55. Actress and neuroscientist and TV host Mayim Bialik turns 50. Singer and rapper Daewon turns 35. And actor Lucas Hedges turns 29. Wish happy all of these celebrities a happy birthday today. Well, I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with SunSounds of Arizona. And you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Friday, December 12th, 2025. I hope you have a great week ahead. I hope you have a great day today. And I hope you keep on listening. Bye for now.